Welcome to the Brattlecast, a first-hand look at secondhand books. With me, Jordan Rich, and of course, the proprietor of the Brattle Bookshop in Boston on West Street, Ken Gloss. And Ken and I talk about, well, you name it. There's a lot of history here. And one would say a cup of coffee in the morning paper is just what everybody asks for. But in your case, the morning paper can go back 100 years. We're going to talk about old newspapers today.
100 years, that's not even that old.
That's a young edition. Seriously, though, you've brought along some samples, and this is the show-and-tell portion of the podcast. We'll get into that. But is there still a dearth of these things out there, old papers?
It's actually interesting. Old papers, either going back to the Revolutionary War, a few that I brought here, Civil War, one abolitionist earlier than the Civil War, they were done on paper that you can touch, hold, read, and the paper's perfectly fine. You don't have to worry about it. Whereas later newspapers, the papers the nowadays, once they're a few years old, the paper is such that it's going to fall apart.
They built things to last back then. I'm looking at the Saturday evening edition of the Boston Daily Journal, June 25th, 1864, and it holds up very, very well.
Yeah. And the other thing is the front page of the paper is mostly all ads.
It's a lot of real estate here.
A lot of real estate.
Wow. And this is something that you would have ascertained how? From a collection?
No, from a collection. Those came in from a collection, but many times where they come is old libraries. You know, trying to make space for computers, for internet, for more social usage. And they have these large runs of old newspapers that were bound volumes, right, haven't been looked at for forever almost, and they sometimes digitize them, or someone already has digitized them, and they need the space more than they need the papers.
You and I were talking about the Boston Athenaeum, which is a neighbor of yours and mine, and it's a great place, one of the original libraries. And I was talking to one of the experts there, who said that the idea of microfilm and all this is passé now because everything's online, as you say. But I don't know about you. When I read the paper, I like to hold the paper.
I enjoy it. I like it. And also, too, it's very interesting when you get into older newspapers. And a lot of them aren't that expensive, and some of them are incredibly expensive. You can go from a few dollars to a paper in the 1840s or 30s to hundreds of thousands of dollars for a paper that maybe has one of the first early printings of the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, I would say so. Now, can I ask you about the Boston paper scene? Because we all know that we are a two-paper town, barely. But in the old days, we had lots of them, right?
Oh, you had lots of paper. Not only that, a paper, even not that far back, 50 years, 60 years, you had the morning edition, the mid-morning edition, the afternoon edition, the late afternoon edition, the evening edition. So one paper sometimes would have 6, 7, 8 editions coming out during the day. And that was amazing, you know, when you think of the reporting. When you get back to the earlier times, there weren't quite as many papers, but a lot of them had smaller circulation. They had very specific areas and what they did. Also, one of the really fun things about when you get to these old newspapers is if you read two different sides of something. A Civil War paper, we one time had a group of Civil War papers. We had a group from New York, and we had a group from Richmond.
Oh, boy.
At the exact same time. And I'll tell you, the Civil War sounds a whole lot different if you're reading a New York paper or you're reading a Richmond paper. Now, one of the things about it, obviously the Richmond paper was Confederate and so on, but what you were reading in that a lot was there'd be a battle, and then 2 or 3 days later, there'd be long stories about cleaning up after the battle. I mean, it was gut-wrenching no matter which side you were on, but more of the fighting, of course, was done in the South. A very rare and famous newspaper is when just before the South was going to lose the battle, they were running out of supplies. They would rip wallpaper, off the wall and then print on the back of the newspaper, the wallpaper.
That's how desperate they were to put out a paper.
They were desperate to put it out. But But you read history. I one time had a paper from the 1770s, and it was on the Boston Massacre. And you're sitting there holding a newspaper, reading about the Boston Massacre. Now, I'll tell you one major difference. I was reading the first sentence, and it never seemed to end. I actually counted 150 words in the first sentence.
So the run-on sentence is nothing new.
It's nothing new, but it was a Salem newspaper, and I'm sitting there holding this paper and saying to myself, somebody in Salem was reading this newspaper and learning about the Boston Massacre, and here I am holding and touching and feeling that same thing, and it really brings history together, and there are lots of collectors.
I'm looking at another example here, and this is The Liberator. Our country is the world. Our countrymen are all mankind. 1846. Boston, of course. The Liberator.
Well, it's a very famous newspaper. It was done by a man named William Lloyd Garrison.
Yes.
It was done on Cornhill in Boston. And this is one of the famous anti-slavery newspapers.
Abolitionist leader, of course, of the time.
And he was publishing this for, this is 1846, so it's a good number of years before the Civil War. But many people say that these rabble rousers, and many of them, were what led in many ways up to the war and so on. And when you get history like this, if you're someone who is for civil rights, is for freeing the slaves, this is one of the key pieces of history. And they're still available. You can get them. They might cost a few hundred dollars, but it's not like they're, you know, unobtainable. And you, again, last year we had Douglass's newspaper, a whole 70 issues
of Frederick Douglass's.
Newspaper. And one of the reasons those are rare, he was going to give his whole collection to Harvard, all his archives, all his history, all his newspapers. His house burnt down before he was able to give it in Boston. And so the history is brought to life.
Not to mention the fact that you're reading reporting and different styles of reporting and writing in journalistic style from the century to the centuries. It's interesting how you say that about that 1700s piece, that 150-word piece. I'm looking at The Liberator, and there's just tons. It's not a lot of pictures here. There's tons of text.
Well, the older newspapers had very few pictures.
Right.
It wasn't until almost the Civil War where they had weekly magazines, the Harper's Weekly, Frank Leslie's Weekly, where they sent artists and photographers.
And Matthew Brady became a household name.
Right. But those were more weeklies than dailies. And you also, then what you also get is, as you move out west, they get rarer and rarer. Another paper I have at the store, and it's interesting, it was an account of the Alamo and telling what was happening at the Alamo. I mean, you're sitting there reading this. But when you look at it, you go, wait a minute, something's not. It was a month and a half after the Alamo before it was being reported in the Boston papers. So you never know what you're going to see. And people draw interesting conclusions. I used to talk to a fifth grade group in Westwood, Massachusetts. Every year they had a career day, and I'd be there, and there was a sociologist, a criminologist, a radio person, and so on. And I used to bring 60 or 70, 150-year-old newspapers and give one to each of the students who were there. And, you know, sometimes I'd get letters back saying thank you. And they were very nice, good students, fifth graders. One student said to me, well, you know, I really don't care that much about old newspapers, but I collect old coins. And he goes, maybe with one of my coins, someone bought the newspaper that you gave me.
Right, that connection.
And someone putting that together.
And of course, the first thing I'm looking at in all these ads is the cost of real estate back then. And and it's really interesting, and you know, how people advertise. Lots of ads for that. Lots of ads for residences.
In Boston, in this area, the thing that you got a lot of ads for were obviously real estate, but also, depending on the paper, you got lots and lots of ads for ship cargoes. and loading, you know, this chip has just come in, we've got this, we've got that. Because, I mean, the docks and so on were a very important part of the city. So the sale of merchandise off of ships, ship coming in, fish coming in, there were a lot of ads for that. Now, when you get to some other newspapers, you also get ads for such and such slave ran away, looks like this, please, there's a reward to send them back. And you know, sort of get into gut-wrenching.
Just curious on how you store papers to preserve them that are this old. I mean, is it keep it out of the light, keep it in a cool place, a warm place? What do you?
Generally, the paper on these aren't that bad. So you don't have to be quite as careful. You don't want it too hot, too dry, too damp. You want to watch out for insects. You know, you don't want little mites or mice love them. Mice absolutely love paper. Well, they nest with it. And so you've got to be careful in that respect. But it's much easier caring for this newspaper than it would one from 1900, 1910. And there are, you know, I'm bringing here 19th century newspapers. There are some in the 20th century. They're harder to handle, harder to look at. Boston Globe was the first American paper to report on the Titanic going down.
I was going to say the value, obviously, of a particular edition, whether it be the Kennedy assassination or the Titanic or whatever, I mean, has to have that from an appraiser's point of view. Is that something that you look at?
Oh, it's tremendous.
Yeah.
In other words, you can have a paper one day and the next day it's the content. Lincoln's assassination, George Washington dying, the Civil War ending, George Washington fighting a battle. I was even saying you can get some French papers with Napoleon at Waterloo. Mm. So the content is very, very important as to the history. Like I say, the most valuable paper I've ever seen had a printing of the Declaration of Independence in it. On the other hand, when you get to the more recent papers, World War II ends, they land on the moon, Kennedy's assassinated, Nixon resigns, sort of on and on like that. Those actually aren't that valuable.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I remember as a kid saving those, thinking, oh, this is going to be worth. I don't think I have them anymore. But you're right, because they were much more mass circulation and more people maybe threw them in the cupboard.
Well, that's exactly. Or they said this is going to be valuable someday. And almost any time in any collectible item, once you say this is going to be valuable, I'm going to save it. Probably 100,000 other people are doing the same thing.
Right.
So, but the content of the paper is amazingly important to what's there, and it's interesting. A lot of times, you can read through, get a paper that doesn't look like that much, but you start reading through it and you can make a story about what they're reporting, about what they're talking about. And people tend, once they realize that they're available, people tend to love them. Now, in Washington, a few years ago, there was a new museum that opened up called the Newseum.
The Newseum, yes.
And they collected, I'll tell you, that's a fabulous, if you want to get interested, matter of fact, I'd love to send a lot of my customers down to the Newseum, get them interested, and then they come back and want to buy things and have them and hold them themselves. It's a fabulous museum, but they collect and keep and wonderful things. Another place that's absolutely fabulous for old newspapers, other than the Brattle Bookshop, the American Antiquarian Society in Worcester. It was started by a man named Isaiah Thomas. He was a newspaper and publisher in Boston just as the Revolution was breaking out. When the Revolution, he was pro-America, pro-Revolution. When the British came in, he had to get out. He moved to Worcester and still kept publishing. But he founded a society of early American newspapers and printing. And so if people are interested, the American Antiquarian Societies,
great
again,
point.
We want to give everybody that first dose for free,
yeah.
Get them interested, and then coming
but
in.
But let's remind people that if they want to come to the store, there's a lot to see.
Oh, there's a lot to see. And just this morning when I was coming here, there was a man going to a conference up on the State House, and he was saying, oh, yeah, and just happened to mention something about Black history, and he'd been to the museum. I said, oh, why don't you come back here in the office? And I pulled out that copy of The Liberator, and he just held it in awe. And that's one of the things that these old items, the fact that you can actually hold, touch, learn about, study, and also reading history from the reporting at the time.
Exactly. The history that was not history then, it was present day. And now we look back, and it's a perspective that you don't get in history books.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a unique perspective because these reporters were on the scene and eyewitnesses. It's really amazing. But I love the ads, I've got to tell you.
Oh, there's no question about the ads are a lot of fun. And sometimes on a lot of the papers, you can learn more about what was going on in the city from the ads than you can sometimes from the reporting, depending on what the paper was doing. And there are people who collect newspapers of different areas of the country, newspapers with different subjects, different publishers of newspapers, and they follow them along. And it's a never-ending search. And usually people who do that, then they start collecting something else. They want to go into it a little more deeper. They want to see the other papers that have come out at the time. Maybe, again, get an English paper that has a perspective on the War of 1812 as opposed to the American perspective.
There are a lot of ads, I noticed, for healing salves and bombs and so forth that today we would call junk medicine, junk science. But, hey, there was no FDA necessarily.
There was no FDA. And a few years later than those papers, there was, of course, Lydia Pinkham, who made a fortune on advertising for cure-alls and so on. Now, the fact that a lot of cure-alls had a fair amount of alcohol in it, you know, I'm sure that helped too.
That doesn't hurt.
But, well, obviously, too, though, the cure-alls, I mean, if you're sick and medicine was at a certain point, you know, you want to do whatever you can.
You put it in perspective, what was happening at the time. I mean, if we can easily look back and laugh at some of this stuff, but this was the way it was.
And do you notice they don't have disclaimers the way you get the TV ads?
Yes. There were still lawyers, but they didn't get to that yet. Well, Ken, thank you so much for bringing to me, and it's just me seeing them at the moment. But the great news is people can go to the store, they can go to the website and get much more information and actually hold these in their hands, which is really great.
And they're a lot of fun.
All right. He is Ken Gloss, the proprietor of the Brattle Bookshop in Boston, a true institution that we love, and that's why the podcast is so popular. And by the way, thank you for tweeting about the podcast. And if you enjoyed the show, tell your friends and send tweets. And as always, you can find us by searching for Brattlecast on Apple, Google Play, and all other platforms where you'll get your podcast. And for updates and other fun content about the Brattlecast, be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter @Brattle Bookshop. My thanks to Ken. I'm Jordan Rich. Have a great day.